Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to CAMH.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by CAMH One Brave Night, a Canada-wide challenge happening now until April 7th to raise funds for people living with mental illness and addiction. Guys, one in five Canadians experience mental illness in any given year. That adds up to millions of people across Canada, but you might never know it because there is so much stigma around mental illness. So on April 7th, thousands of people across Canada are going to step up and stay up to raise money and awareness for those living with mental illness and addiction, and I hope you will consider joining too. Together, we can redefine what normal is, and we can show those affected that it is okay to speak out about how they are feeling and seek help. If any of this resonates with you, there's something you can do about it right now. You can go to onebravenight.ca/CanadaLand and sign up for CAMH One Brave Night. Once again, that is onebravenight.ca/CanadaLand. Jen Gerson.
Hi.
Calgary correspondent with the National Post. Thank you for coming back onto Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thanks for pulling me out of the deep, dark depths of my child-infested, vomit-filled basement.
Yeah, no problem. We're going to be talking today about Quebec. They are butthurt over a bad McLean's article, again.
Poor Pookies.
We're going to be talking about award season in Canadian journalism.
Yay!
And we're going to be talking about now international, possibly Canadian bans on large electronics on planes from some places. One more reason to never go anywhere ever again.
Yay.
Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Chloe Smith, Sarabjot Samra, Kristen McLean, Ryan, Adam Travis, Bill Metcalf, Laura Hill, and Leo McKay. Leo, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because five or six times a year, something happens in Canadian media, something outrageous and absurd, and I look around and think, why is nobody losing their shit over this? And then I turn on Canada Land, and you are losing your shit. I find comfort in that.
Jen, this episode is also brought to you by Hover.com. Do you know that they offer a .mom domain suffix?
Why, goodness me, no. All of my dreams to become a mommy blogger, all those aspirations can be now fulfilled.
Look,
I don't mean to limit you. There's also .mo. There's .guru. There's .fish. There are 400 domain extensions to choose from.
Basically, I can be like a cow guru mom fish. Perfect.
Absolutely. The dream is yours to realize. Listen, if what you want is a domain name or an email address, you should not have to opt out of page after page of add-ons that you do not want or need. And that is why Hover only offers domains and email, so you can focus on finding a great domain name and go back to working on your great idea. They also believe you should not have to pay for things that should already be included with your domain. So most people don't realize that when you register a domain name, your contact information, including your email address, your phone number, your home address, all of that is automatically published online for marketers to spam you and hackers to find out what's going on. They offer at Hover Whois Privacy. They can obscure all that information from the public for free. It doesn't cost them anything more to do that, so why should it cost you anything more? Unlike other domain providers who will charge you something for that purely to profit, not because it costs them anything. So look, go to hover.com/CanadaLand. Just go check out and see what domain suffixes they have. Go see if the URL that you're looking for is available and under what suffix. Go to hover.com/CanadaLand. So find yours today. Once again, that is hover.com/CanadaLand. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding the right balance of how much of other people do you want. I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Andrew Potter vit à Montréal depuis un an à peine, mais selon lui, le cafouillage sur l'autoroute 13, le manque de communication sont le résultat d'un manque de solidarité qui gangrène la société québécoise.
Oh my God, Jen, this Andrew Potter piece in Maclean's. I'm so happy about this controversy. I know people are very upset about it, but in this horrible world where horrible things are happening, this is so absurd and low stakes, and I love everything about this story. I just love it to bits.
This is the most Canadian, brouhaha you could possibly imagine. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, heartening testament to the parochial and utterly passionate nature of the Canadian spirit.
Can you summarize it for our listeners? Can you tell people, start with a snowstorm and let's just lay it out.
Okay, I didn't even hear about the snowstorm over here in Calgary until I read about it in Andrew Potter's piece. Apparently, there's this big snowstorm, and a lot of people got trapped in the highway near Montreal, I believe, right? It was a giant, mess. It was a big clusterfuck, and there's some motorists trapped in their cars, and no one came to help them, and it was all very apocalyptic. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was a 12-hour traffic jam. There were some trucks at the front. Apparently, there was a trucker who refused to be towed. So basically, everything that can break, and in Quebec, lots of things break all the time, and they all broke at once, apparently, and they're trying to figure out what the hell happened. But for 12 hours, people were trapped in their cars on a highway.
Yeah, and in brutal weather.
Which is no joke. It's serious stuff.
Yeah.
Questions should be asked, et cetera, et cetera.
So Potter, who I believe is now working at McGill.
Well, where did he used to work?
He used to work at the Ottawa Citizen. He used to be the editor-in-chief of the Ottawa Citizen, has now gone into academia to work at McGill, and I believe he has a fellowship there. He then writes this piece for Maclean's. Maclean's, of course, Maclean's. And it's a bit hyperbolic, but it's a very fact-based piece, and he backs it up with a lot of stats, suggesting that essentially Quebec is dealing with a level of civic breakdown and lack of social cohesion is basically the thesis of his piece. And that this big traffic jam was quite indicative of the low trust, alienated society that Quebec has evolved into. Now, there were a couple of minor errors in the piece. There were a couple of turns of phrases that were a bit hyperbolic. But as Quebec is wont to do, it then lost its shit over this Maclean's piece and inundated Maclean's with complaints and angry responses, et cetera, with shades of the Bonhomie corruption story from many years past.
When Maclean's, Marty Patrickin writing in Maclean's, wrote that Quebec is the most corrupt province in Canada and it became like a provincial incident, Maclean's was rebuked by the legislature.
Yeah, and it turns out that they were completely correct, by the way. They were totally vindicated in the end, 100%. And like how many Quebec City mayors are now facing jail time? They were completely correct about that assertion. Nonetheless, this is now happening. This is Bonhomie 2, the sequel. And poor Andrew Potter has been inundated with very, very angry people who are calling him an idiot. And this isn't the Quebec that I understand. And that reflects the community I live in, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm picking up on something that I need to. Are you pro Potter in this whole fracas? You're sounding a little pro
Potter. Dare I even suggest it? Do I want to risk me and my son's life by suggesting that I think perhaps Quebec might be losing its shit a little bit ridiculously?
Dude, even Andrew Potter isn't pro Potter. He's walked back the whole damn thing.
He retracted his statement in a Facebook, in the most bizarre Facebook apology I've ever read that had one phrase in it that completely stuck in my craw. I think you could probably take some issue with some of the points in the piece.
You think?
Sure, you could. I mean,
Can I just get in here for a minute on the piece? Basically, he goes from the fact that there was this traffic delay in the 12 hours in the snowstorm, and this is evidence. I'll quote here, it reveals the essential malaise eating away at the foundations of Quebec society. He goes on, Quebec is an almost pathologically alienated and low-trust society.
There are two issues here. One is that, like, the thesis of the piece and whether or not the thesis of the piece is defensible. That is one issue. The second issue is just the overwhelming response to the piece.
Totally.
These are two distinct issues. So if we're going to talk about the thesis of the piece first, do I think that perhaps that thesis is a little bit hyperbolic and a bit over the top? Yeah, sure. No question. I wouldn't dispute that. He's clearly taking some liberties as a columnist and as a commentator. He's using some hyperbolic language, no question. There were some nitpicking issues with some facts in the piece. Fine, whatever. I mean, I think he's one of the issues that got pointed out, for example, is that he said something to the effect of, you know, every restaurant issues two bills so that you can basically pay under the table.
Every restaurant gives you
some restaurants do that. So it got corrected. So I mean, don't worry.
I lived in Montreal for almost a decade, and I can give you anecdote after anecdote about various forms of corruption and, you know, graft and little tax evasions. There's tons of that stuff. No one's ever given me two different bills
at a restaurant. There, so I don't know. But so like, you can take issue with these sorts of issues, but then do any of these issues fundamentally undermine the less hyperbolic thesis of the piece, which is actually quite well backed up with stats, which suggests that, in fact, Quebec is uniquely alienated and there's a breakdown of civil cohesion. And I think he makes a pretty fair argument to that extent. I mean, and I'll bring up an example here from Alberta. When the Alberta floods happened in 2013 and, you know, 100,000 people got evacuated from their homes, the level of social cohesion I saw in the response to those floods was nothing short of tear-jerkingly remarkable. I mean, literally thousands of people came out to affected flooded homes, put on their boots, and spent days and days and days shoveling out shit and mud from total strangers' basements, ripping out drywall, hard work. And they were doing it for complete strangers. I mean, I can't even describe this even to this day. It still sticks with me, you know, what, 4 years later. People were spontaneously setting up neighborhood block areas where volunteers could come and sign in. And, you know, you had kids running around giving people free donuts and Tim Hortons.
Oh, you dropped the patriotic Tim Hortons reference. Oh, Jen, God bless their prairie hearts.
It was classic. And I will also point out to the Alberta wildfires. Okay, people, random strangers, filled up their RVs and, like, headed directly into a burning city to try and provide, like, homegrown, a non-directed, non-government-directed aid to the people who are trying to escape the wildfires. I mean, this sort of stuff in Alberta is very common. If you had or a couple hundred people stranded on a highway for 12 hours in a snowstorm on the Transcan, just south of me here in Calgary, I would bet anyone $1,000 that you would have strangers literally putting on their snowshoes and skis, packing up their backpacks with, you know, food and blankets, and trying to help those people out. And I don't think that Alberta is unique in this. I think that the majority of Canada is like this.
Except for Quebec, where I understand from Andrew Potter that people who are locked in that 12-hour traffic jam were actually eating each other's children.
but you know, it raises some questions about why that spontaneous help didn't seem to materialize in Quebec in the way that I would absolutely expect it to materialize.
It did. The people in the cars were absolutely helping each other. If you ran out of fuel, somebody would offer you a spot in their car.
So you're saying that this is just factually wrong, that he just got the facts of what happened in this snowstorm wrong?
No, he doesn't even deal with that side of it. He doesn't even look. I actually agree with you.
Was he wrong or wasn't he wrong, Jesse? This is the important point. Is he, like, I've never lived in Quebec. I have no idea. I have no clue.
Is he wrong that the failure of the city to clear this traffic jam and the failure, I guess, hypothetically, of people to strap on skis and bring thermoses of brandy, which I don't know if it did or didn't happen, it could have happened. Is he wrong that that is evidence that, here, and let me quote again, the proportion of people who report having zero close friends is highest in Quebec. And you didn't even, the cops don't only not wear uniforms, they're wearing clownish pink, yellow, and red camouflage pants. Well, that's just, no, that's factually true. No, the piece is wrong in that it is a classic, like, it feels like Andrew Potter got home angry from, like, having, you know, being, like, butted in line at the supermarket and then is like, this society's going to hell because I had a bad day.
I can't actually comment about whether or not his thesis is correct or incorrect. All I can point out is that almost all of the reaction that he's received has had nothing to do with actually rebutting his thesis. It's almost had everything to do with, fuck you, outsider, Andrew Potter, you're an idiot, I hate you, this is, you know, another evil Anglo, you know, whatever, shitting on Quebec. It's got nothing to do with actually rebutting the thesis. And that, to me, is very indicative, because that, to me, is almost exactly what we saw with the Bonhomie stuff. It's almost exactly what we saw with Jan Wong and the Pure Lane response when she went into Quebec and dared to assert that, you know, what was his name, the shooter, and the wasn't Pure Lane, and that might have contributed to his alienation.
Yeah, Kim Virgil. Yeah.
Again, you can dispute these theses. Of course you can. But what I'm pointing out here is that the reaction to them is so over the top. It's so personal. It's so defensive. Oh, and I would also point out, it's not just Quebec that has these over the top reactions to being criticized. When McLean's went into Winnipeg, it was the same thing. I think more than 10 years ago, they did a story, I think, about Regina, and it was the same thing. I mean, on a much smaller scale, a couple of years ago, I did a story about a kidnapping in Sparwood, BC, and I had the audacity to mention that a lot of people there lived in, like, trailer parks and seemed pretty poor. And, like, to this day, I'm afraid to go to Sparwood, British Columbia, because, like, I'm that terrible, evil city girl from the Calgary Herald who had the audacity to point out that there were poor people in Sparwood, BC. I mean, I'm expecting some evil tweets even just to mention that to this
day. You're totally right. Yeah. Like, this is actually what unites Canada. Quebec is not in its own little solitude. We're all really thin-skinned losers. But this is why I love this story.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying we're a country of thin-skinned losers who cannot tolerate outsiders coming in and criticizing us. It's universal.
This is such mild stuff. It's like if a comedian is just like, hey, New York sucks. Like, you can say that and not have an international incident where, like, the premier of Quebec has decried this column. Melanie Joly, like, member of the Trudeau cabinet, the leader of the opposition. Like, this is another huge incident. And, like, they're in the habit of, like, publicly rebuking Maclean's and other publications. But this is why I love the story so much. We don't have to praise Potter. We can make fun of everybody in this. Listen to this. This is one of the comments that's, I think, you know, not even a standout from the Facebook after Potter apologized for the piece. This is from Mark Dufour commenting on Facebook underneath the apology. You are an asshole. The typical Anglo asshole with his dribbling hatred of everything French just because you have the typical cultural inferiority complex of the petty bourgeois who faces a culture infinitely richer than your own dismal bigoted shopkeeper excuse for a culture that knows only about buying cheap and selling expensive while hoping no one figures out how much you screw them. You are one of the...
And if Andrew Potter had come into, like, Calgary and was just like, you know what? This city is, like, economically stratified and snobbish. He would have been exactly the same thing. And it would have been a bunch of, like, people saying, you evil East Coast, you know, Laurentian consensus elites coming in and trashing Alberta and your blah, 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 blah. It would have been exactly the same thing. I almost want to give it a name. It's like the stranger syndrome, right? If a quote-unquote perceived outsider comes in and makes a completely fair, accurate observation that is negatively reflects on the place in which they are observing it, it's like the response is almost universally insane. It's completely insane. You got to have, like, the mayor speak out, the premier's got to speak out. Like, it's all of the politicians will now take points from their electorate by shit canning the writer. Like, it becomes
it's a gimme. It's just an easy, cheap way.
And Quebec, I'm sorry, Quebec is a bad offender for this. Like Quebec's done this more than other cities, but it's not, as I said, it's not just Quebec who responds in this way. It's Anglo-Canada is exactly the same thing.
I love everything that's been written about this. I'll continue from Mark Dufour. You are one of the many reasons why we want to get the fuck out of your immensely boring, racist, idiotic, incompetent excuse for a country that has so many skeletons in its closet that it's totally ossified. You are yet another proof that Anglos hate and despise us and that we have no place in your bland country. Damn, I like that better than the first column. I love everything that's been written. I love the corrections Maclean has issued. Here's one of the corrections. We have also removed a reference in an earlier version of this article noting that, quote, bank machines routinely dispense 50s by default.
Can I also just say, like, if I were Maclean's, I would own this reputation so much, I would literally send a writer to every single major city in Canada in order just to trash it, and I would call it What is Uniquely Wrong with Your Terrible Fucking City, the Maclean's edition. Like, I would just own this. I would do an entire magazine.
You could do a whole book like that, right?
Yeah, like, you could do an entire little, like, or a special edition. And, like,
right. The Canada Land Guide to Canada hits bookstores this May 2nd, the Canada Land Guide to Canada.
Like,
they're on my turf.
Yeah, I wouldn't even have the correspondence. I would have literally people who don't live in these cities, and I would send them out to random places, like send Jason Marcus off to Charlottetown and just shit on Charlottetown and be like, this city's been dining out on its Anne of Green Gables reputation for 100 years, and it's bullshit. Anne of Green Gables isn't that good, guys. And Green Gables is, like, a stupid landmark. And, like by the way, redheads suck. Like, I would own this.
Screw every other topic. We're just talking about this today. Every part of this is wonderful. First of all, everyone's a coward. Maclean's has walked it back. Andrew Potter has walked it back. McGill, the opinions expressed by J. Andrew Potter, the head of our Canadian Studies Department, do not represent those of McGill, is their tweet. Oh, thank you for that official statement, because I was otherwise under the impression that every half-assed hot take that a faculty member writes for Maclean's is the official position of your university.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying.
And can we also just point out, okay, this is really funny, but can we point out, like, the level of insanity and political pressure that McGill must have been put under in order to issue that tweet, and how completely indicative of how unhealthy a political discourse and culture Quebec has become.
Yeah, to hell with academic freedom, to hell with the idea that a university is separate from...
Just reminding people that this asshole isn't one of us.
And this is just about nothing. You're right, though. There is a piece that's buried in Andrew Potter's... every part of this tells us about everything that's going on, because Andrew Potter is obviously... Like, people leave news. He was the editor-in-chief of a newspaper, and they're bored stiff. Like, an Academic Post, some sinecure getting paid well. It's so boring. They just want to come back in and stir shit up. Like, he knows better than to write garbage like this. Buried within it were some good stuff. Like, the stats about civic engagement levels being lower in Quebec than anywhere else. The stats about, like, loneliness and people having, like, lower levels of friendship are over 75. That's statistical information that you could write a solid piece from. But he just... He just fires off this nonsense. And this comes on the heels of, like, people were saying, like, if you're going to write stuff that's this factually incorrect and this lousy and this Quebecophobic, which was actually what the premier used, they called it Quebecophobic, thank you, then somebody suggested you should just stop covering Quebec. To which Marty Patrickin, the recently laid off Quebec correspondent who has written anti-Quebec stuff that was far more solid than this, said, yeah, too late for that. They already fired their Quebec correspondent. They have no Quebec bureau anymore, which maybe is why they're like, I bet Andrew Potter would like to give whatever $300 check he got from Maclean's for this piece
back. Okay, so can we also talk about the fact that Andrew Potter walked this back and retracted it on Facebook? Because I think that that bothers me more than any other part of this entire piece.
Absolutely.
Because whether or not you agree with the thesis right or wrong, whether or not you thought it was hyperbolic, fine, whatever. I mean, we can debate that, and we can have a journalistic debate, and that's fine. But we can do that without necessarily expecting Andrew Potter needed to retract that. Like, that didn't need to happen. That's a bit absurd. And there was one thing that really bothered me about his Facebook retraction. Okay, so this is in his apology. He says, and this is a quote, "A political writer's first duty is to reflect his community back to itself. Quite obviously, I failed. When people you read and respect tell you they don't recognize their society in your description, it signals a failure of empathy and imagination, and it is time to take a step back." Okay, a political writer's first duty is to reflect his community back to itself. What does that mean?
I think what he's saying is that we should write things that people like.
Yes, that's how I would interpret that statement. Like, a political duty's first duty is to reflect his community back to... Sorry,
in a way that they would like to be reflected? I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're absolutely not. I mean...
I'm sure Quebec would like to be reflected back to itself as being this utterly beautiful, cohesive society that is so perfect and unique and distinct. It would love to be reflected. I'm sure Calgary would love to be reflected as this a uniquely entrepreneurial place where nothing ever goes wrong and there is no, you know, socioeconomic stratification. I'm sure they would love to be reflected that way. I'm not writing that piece. Fuck off. That's not a political writer's job at all.
It's actually very low value. Like saying nice things about a place that reaffirms people's nicest conceptions of themselves is like kind of a useless thing to express. There is something in this that speaks to the actual mission of a political writer, and that Quebec is so aberrantly opposed to facing. There is something to this thing that keeps coming up that Marty was writing about in the corruption thing, that Quebec society... I'll speak about Montreal where I lived, okay? I fucking love the place. I love it there, but I can't detach everything I love. And I think there's a connection. It doesn't work very well. It is a strange city where things like just work slowly. There is a lot of graft. There is a problem with the way that organized labor functions in Montreal. There is a problem with like actual like mafia. There is a problem with corruption's influence on the bureaucracy, the layers of bureaucracy. The infrastructure is crumbling. There is a reliance on all kinds of subsidies for all sorts of things. It's a very hard place to do business. It doesn't want to be like the rest of North America, which is kind of what makes it great. But like, you know, there is just such a sensitivity about talking about that. But there is something there that needs to be dealt with. And there is a rule in Quebec that Anglos aren't allowed to talk about that stuff.
Well, and I would also, lest anybody thinks that we are a bunch of evil, bland, Quebecophobic Anglophones who just want to shit on Quebec, I would also point out that criticism of the place in which you are working isn't, you know, unique to Quebec. Quebec is not the place in Canada where only bad things happen, where only corruption happens. That's nonsense. I mean, some of the stuff that you've highlighted in Canada Land about, you know, the Irvings families and their undue influence on journalism and issues in Atlantic Canada. You know, I could point to half a dozen issues with the political scene here in Alberta, which is consistently goddamn batshit. But if we can't go in, if you think that the job of a political writer is to go in and to reflect a community back to itself, then we can't really touch on any of that. None of it. It's all off limits.
Yeah, no, everybody's totally covered in shame on this one. He never should have apologized and come up with that ridiculous description. McGill acted ridiculously.
I can see what you're saying is that he didn't ground this thesis in enough solid reporting and solid fact in order to make it totally indefensible. There were weaknesses in the piece that people were allowed to tear it down. But as I said, I would come back to the idea that I don't really think anybody's effectively debated the rebuttal. Almost all of this criticism is just, again, it's stranger syndrome response. It's evil Anglo comes in and trashes on Quebec, fuck you. And that's, you know, okay, fine, I understand that response, but that's an emotional response. That's not a rational rebuttal of what he's suggesting.
Okay, Jen, I think we have beat this absolutely to death. Maybe we have time for one more segment. Let's skip Duly Noted, and let me just thank our second sponsor. This episode is also brought to you by Borrowell, a company that we've worked with in the past, a company that I actually used before they were a sponsor. What I told you about Borrowell in the past, this is a financial upstart, borrowell.com. You can just go and check your credit score. I mean, this is information that was kept from us. Everybody else, our employers, our banks could access our credit ratings, and nobody bothered to do this. It cost money to do it, and it wasn't really made available to you, information about you. Now you can just go and for free go to borrowell.com and check your credit rating. Today, I'm going to talk to you about another thing they offer, which is some relief from your credit card debt. Credit card debt is a huge problem in Canada. The average credit card debt per person is $4,094. Sometimes you're getting like 19.9% interest rates on that. It is absurd, and it affects middle class and low-income people most of all. Borrowell can save Canadians in credit card debt a significant amount of money, $4,800 on average per Borrowell's figures. Just like their free credit score service, there is no risk in checking this out. They can get you into a better loan rate that you might qualify for depending on your credit score. It only takes a few minutes, and checking your loan options won't affect your score. You can browse around with no impact. In fact, it makes sense to check out what you qualify for, even just to know what options are available in the future. Check it out at borrowell.com/CanadaLand.
For breaking news, the winner is the Ottawa Citizen.
Humanities will honor one winner of the Michener Award. This year, we received 30 excellent entries from newspapers and broadcasters across Canada, five more than last
year. Canada does, with its own unique awards program, RTDNA honors the best in electronic journalism with the regional and national Edward R. Murrow Awards.
It's been an absolutely inspiring night, thanks to everyone in this room. Your work has been courageous and sensitive and quite brilliant.
Jen, are you nominated?
No, I'm not. Okay, so I have to say right off the bat that as a National Post employee, I'm sort of obligated to express bitterness and dissatisfaction with the National Newspaper Awards, because every year it becomes, for the most part, it's a Globe and Toronto Star Fest, and the Post is consistently left out of the club. And for those people who are listening to the show who aren't journalists, I think we have to explain what the National Newspaper Awards are. Because there is absolutely no way that a non-journalist would have ever heard of the goddamn things nor care.
Is there any explanation beyond that, like, we just have umpteen award shows and this is one of them? I mean, every industry seems to love to festoon people with awards, and we are maybe most guilty of that because we don't actually have jobs or money to give people anymore.
Absolutely. And I should think we also point out that if you are a newspaper journalist, the National Newspaper Awards is second probably only to the Michener's in terms of their sort of importance. Basically what happens is that every year, dozens of newspaper journalists and sometimes non-newspaper journalists get nominated for these awards. And the newsrooms themselves take these awards ridiculously seriously. And everybody then gets shuttled off to usually some like C-level conference room in a hotel in a city to go to the stuffy little area that's barely decorated to collect these little paper plaques that are covered in frames, eat rubber chicken, and then get drunk. And, you know, it's a fun time, sort of, in a way. And I think I should say something really good about the NNAs, and that is I think that they can, at their absolute best, give much-needed recognition and a nice ego boost to people who really deserve it and who really need it. People who work really hard in this industry, who really get shat on, you know, 364 days out of the year. And one day, you know, they get celebrated by their peers, and that's a really wonderful thing. I would also give awards generally this kudos, and that is I think that they can be used to marshal resources to underreported stories. That is, I think that reporters can go to their editors and be like, look, this is a really important story. I think it needs to be covered. I think it's award bait. And therefore, we should really be marshaling some resources, some time, some money to covering it. I think that that is... Oh, and I would also say this, is that sometimes at their best, the NNAs can highlight work and awards that gets completely overlooked and ignored in Central Canada.
Jen, you fucking Canadian. This is your preamble for your excoriating hot take against the awards. And you were basically giving the awards
an award.
I'm
going to shit
first.
On them in just a second, okay? All right? I'm going
to
get there.
You don't have to preface it. Have at it, please.
That is them at their best. At their absolute worst, they are a totally and utterly subjective, complete and total bullshit, Central Canadian Toronto media party fucking circle jerk that mean absolutely nothing and yet have institutions and individuals chasing very hollow vanities that are utterly meaningless and serve no function to the actual audiences that they should be serving.
That's Jen Garrison. Can I just point out how halting and careful you were for the preamble, but how naturally that second part came to you? You just sounded so much more in your element for that part.
Because I'm a horrible person.
You are, and that's why you're here, because that's actually useful, whereas the first part, you know, okay, awards can be nice. There is a problem. Like, most people just don't give a damn about this. They don't know the awards exist, and why should they care? And you're right. Who cares? Give people some recognition. Why not? Here's the why not. In an economy where papers are like not making money anymore and journalism isn't making money anymore, these awards kind of like are this monopoly currency that you use as like insurance to not get fired. You think that, you know, you won't get laid off. And I think to the institution, which, as you say, are awards obsessed, especially the Globe and the Star, it's like that's what they do instead of. And it starts to influence, maybe in a good way, they try to have some awards bait that are like, you know, and I've talked about this before, there's some stories that are like kind of eye-rolling in just how virtuous they try to be. And then there's other things that are like...
I call that those stories award bait.
Award bait. Yeah. Some award bait is actually good stuff, but you hear about pernicious effects of this. You hear about the institution decides which stories to feature and turn into award bait, and they favor certain things, and other things are almost like pesky when they win awards. At its worst...
They're now crafting these stories in order to win awards as opposed to in order to serve the audiences or make changes or do the things that journalism is supposed to do.
Yes. And the worst thing that can happen, you know what? I'm going to go blind item here. Okay. Blind item, a major Canadian newspaper, I am told on good authority, held back a major consequential investigation for months in order to position it in the next calendar year for an awards purpose. And this was a story that had a lot of impact for a lot of people and had policy ramifications that if in fact this story was ready months earlier, there's a very strong argument that it should have come out as soon as it was ready. And I am told on good authority that it was held back so that they could win more awards. And quick note, the reason why I'm presenting that as a blind item and not telling you which paper and which story that is that we haven't verified it. We haven't confirmed it to the point where we're happy to go and actually report that and tell you all the details, which we would like to do. So if you know what I'm talking about and you have information about that, we are happy to talk to you on an anonymous basis. You can hit up Goldsby at editor@CanadaLandShow.com.
Look, I mean, I think for me as a writer, the real problem that I have with these is watching them come out, particularly at the Post, where I'm, you know, as I said, contractually obliged to be bitter about them, is that, you know, these things come out and in every newsroom that's not the Post or the Star, where they're like, you know, getting into these weird pissing contests and beating on their chests for their nomination counts, in every other place, they just shit on morale. Because in every other newsroom, you have so many people who are working their asses off under more and more pressure, under fewer and fewer resources, and they're doing really good work that often isn't recognized. And, you know, I can't tell you, here being here in Calgary, how many times I've seen things like a really important local story that the local papers just fucking killed it on, and then the nomination or the award goes to the Globe and Mail. That happens all the time. And it just reinforces to me the fact that these are really subjective, they're really bullshit. A lot of it has to do with the way that the stories are presented, the way that awards are submitted. And, you know, I think that, you know, at the Post, this is where I talk about the Post and how I'm personally bitter about it, is that, you know, I would not expect the Post to be killing it in the investigative journalism category because we don't do a lot of investigative journalism. But, you know, the Post is consistently overlooked in the columnist category. It's like, if there's one goddamn thing our paper does well, it's columnists. Fuck off. You know?
Terry Corcoran, Barbara Kay, Conrad Black.
Andrew Coyne,
when will
John
these people
Imeson,
finally?
Like, I'm sorry.
When will they finally get the recognition?
Come on now. You can disagree. That's the one thing that we've really focused on and we do well. But anyway, that's a personal whatever rant. But you know, I see a lot of times the awards go to stuff that, again, I won't name, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, to me, a lot of this is bullshit. And I also find that as a writer, that the newsrooms that take this seriously, that take these awards too seriously, and a lot of them really do, it has the writers chasing the wrong things. It has the writers putting a lot of their self-worth and their self-esteem into essentially the external validation of a bunch of, you know, retired J school profs. Some of them are judges who would like haven't worked in the field in 20 years.
We're not supposed to be so damn honorable. We're not supposed to be so virtuous. Like, you know, you got to get in the muck if you want a story, and if you're concerned with prestige.
Our job isn't to chase prestige. That is not what we should be doing. As I said, it has you chasing this external validation of really people, of judges, essentially. And I think that as a journalist, it's the one profession where you actually have to have – it's not the one profession. That's a ridiculous thing to say. It's a profession where you have to have like a rock-solid sense of your own self-worth and your own sense of an ego that is grounded in certainty that you are happy with what you are doing for your own purposes and your own sake. And when you are chasing prestige and you're chasing awards like this, it undermines your – ability to be confident as a writer in what you were doing for your own sake. And that's where I think that these awards can be very pernicious and hurtful, because I see so many writers doing really amazing work and they're only competing against themselves. They're constantly pushing themselves to be better and better and better. And then these awards come out and it's like the air gets let out of the newsroom for like a full day. People get really down on themselves about them. And that's totally ridiculous. And intellectually, we all know that's completely ridiculous, because we are all very proud of what we do.
Like, as we said earlier, our job is often to tell people things about themselves that they don't want to hear. So, you know, that's a strange service to provide. And you can't be chasing after, you know, you can't want everybody to like celebrate you and do that job well at the same time. Jen, I'm curious here. You ever won a national newspaper award?
Yeah, I guess I did.
You did? Oh, congratulations. That's amazing.
Like ages ago. Who cares? But here's where I have such a hard time, is that I won that, you know, when I was really young and starting out in my career. And every year I've produced work that I think is better than what I won the award for. And like better reported, better written. Like, in the last 10 years, I've improved hugely, and I've never been nominated since, and that's fine. But I look back at it and I'm like, okay, so you're going to tell me I peaked in my career, like whatever, 10 years ago? Of course I didn't. I got much, much better from there, but nobody recognized it. And that's fine, because I was happy. I learned to be happy with what I was doing for my own sake. And that's all that really mattered.
My biggest problem is that there is no award for best defensive, desperate, angry screed, because I think that this episode would be a shoo-in.
And on that note, my baby is crying.
Jen Gerson. We'll end on the baby crying. Okay. Jen Gerson, I'll let you get back to your kid. Thank you. That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand. Where can people find you?
Don't. I'm taking care of a baby. Leave me alone. Quebec, don't hate me, Quebec. Don't hate me.
Okay. Jen's gone. Our website is CanadaLandShow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. Tickets are selling briskly for our international tour of Canada. Get yours at CanadaLandShow.com/booktour. I make this show with Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.